Blog Talk Radio.
On Monday, November the 13th, a couple of weeks before Thanksgiving, 2017 seems to be flying a lot faster than any other year that I recall. It must be because we're having fun doing all these podcasts and writing all that stuff that we've been writing. Let me say a very happy number 76 to Mel Stottlemyre. If you're a Yankee fan, you'll remember that name from the late 60s and 70s. I just saw this today and it absolutely floored me. Elvis Presley was in Dallas on this day in 1971. He had a big concert here in Dallas. I had no idea that Elvis had been here in 71. I know he came back in 76, but I had no idea in 1971. And on a more serious note, on this day in 1982, the Vietnam War Memorial was dedicated. So that is the place you have to see. If you go to Washington, D.C., you have to see the Vietnam War Memorial. I think it's one of the finest ever in a city that has, of course, many, many more monuments as well. Well, today we're going to look at a couple of stories. I have a post this morning at the American Thinker regarding Vice President Biden and all the talk about 2016 and potentially 2020. And I've got a couple of ideas about that. Obviously, a lot of controversy down in Alabama regarding Judge Moore. I've got a couple of thoughts on that as well. President Trump is in Asia. I think it's so far it's been a pretty good trip for the president. Sometimes it's hard to see that he doesn't seem to get the benefit of the doubt from the media. I mean, when Obama was president, he would always get the benefit of the doubt. With Trump, it's like they're slicing everything he says and always looking for something in whatever he says. But the reality is that I think this has been a pretty good trip for the president. There's all this kind of talk about cutting a deal with Putin about ISIS in the Middle East. That would be a major accomplishment. But I think the single biggest thing would be China and North Korea. If, in fact, China helps him on North Korea, that could be one of the greatest foreign policy achievements, frankly, in 50 years. So we'll wait and see what happens. But I would have to say that it's been a pretty good trip so far. Let's talk about Vice President Biden. A lot of talk about him. There's a lot of talk that he would have won the election in 2016. The problem with that kind of talk is that we can never prove it. I mean, there's no way for us to prove it because he was not on the ticket. That's like saying that the Cubs would have beaten the Astros in the World Series. Well, maybe so, but they didn't play the Astros. The Dodgers played the Astros. So all of this stuff, what if, is exactly that. Just what if. It doesn't really tell you anything other than it supports whatever theory you want to support. Now, there's some talk right now about Biden coming back in 2020, and I see a couple of scenarios where that could happen. For example, let's take a good scenario for the Democrats. Let's say that the Republicans cannot do anything on health care, on taxes, and basically they go into 2018 as a crippled party. The Democrats do real well in the House, take over the House, come close to taking over the Senate, perhaps even take over the Senate by upsetting a couple of Republicans. Now, all of a sudden, you have a crippled President Trump running for re-election in 2020, assuming he even runs then for re-election. I think that would be a scenario where the Democratic Party would be wide open. But I don't think that would be a scenario where they would go back to Biden, to the Vice President Biden. I think in that scenario, most Democrats would say to Vice President Biden, look, you're a part of the past. We've got all these new faces. Let them run for president. Now, the other scenario would be a bad scenario for the Democrats. Let's say that President Trump gets tax reform. I think he will, by the way. Let's say that he scores a couple of foreign policy successes like North Korea, like ISIS. Let's say the economy is doing well. Let's say he manages to get something done on the border and with DACA and all that kind of stuff. And let's say the Republicans hold on to the House and maybe pick up some seats in the Senate like they're supposed to. Now, all of a sudden, you have a very strong President Trump running for re-election in 2020. And that's where I think the Democrat Party could turn to Biden and say, look, Biden, we need somebody to run, because none of the guys want to run this year because they don't want to get defeated. They don't want to get defeated by President Trump. And I think that would be the kind of scenario where potentially the Democrats would turn to a Biden and say, you know what, we need somebody to run. We need somebody to step in there and sort of take the hit for the party. And that's where I think a Biden nomination could very well happen. He could be like Mondale in 84 or Stevenson in 56, where the party simply said, we got to have a nominee. Nobody wants to be the nominee because they don't want to lose. So they turn to a fellow like Vice President Biden. Again, this is all up in the air. It's all speculation. Nobody really knows what's going to happen in 2020. But those would be the two scenarios where I could see the Democrats nominating Vice President Biden. In a good-for-the-Democrat scenario, I don't think they would. In a bad-for-the-Democrat scenario where President Trump is easily headed for re-election, I could see it in that scenario. I could see it where he simply becomes a sacrificial lamb, gets nominated, he goes out there, does the best he can, and then loses to President Trump. And then you'll see a bunch of other Democrats lining up for the future. That's basically the two scenarios I see. One, unlikely. The second one, likely, particularly if President Trump is very strong. So we'll see how it all works out. I don't know how it will work out in 2018 because nobody really knows. The truth is that there's so many balls up in the air that it's hard to predict 2018. We're going to be talking about that on Wednesday with my good friend Barry Castleman, the Prairie editor. He does a lot of analysis of 2018, and he thinks right now that everything is up in the air, that you can have a good scenario or a bad scenario. It all depends on how things come down. And that's what I believe will be the case in 2018. So exactly what will happen, we don't know. But we do know there's going to be an election in 2018. That much we do know. And what happens in that election? Well, God only knows, because there's way too many things up in the air at the moment. We're going to take a little break. We're going to hear from my friend Carlos, and we'll be right back.
This is Carlos Quevez, Harpist, and I would like to see you guys this Saturday night at Nola Brasserie Authentic Cajun and Creole Restaurant, located at 1201 Main Street, downtown Dallas. I'll be performing instrumental high-energy jazz at 7:30 until midnight. So make your reservation today at 469-872-1820.
And as I always like to do, make sure you check Carlos on Facebook, because he's got updates of where he's at around town. And he's in different places during the week. And if you go to his Facebook page, he's always telling you where you can go have a nice dinner and listen to his amazing music. My good friend Carlos Guedes from Venezuela. It's a great honor to have him as a friend of our show. Just a quick couple of things. You remember Oscar Lopez Rivera. This is the man who was released early from prison by President Obama right before he left office. He had been involved in several attacks in New York City. He is what they call a Puerto Rican nationalist. Well, it turns out that he was released early, like I said, and now he's heading to Cuba, where he's going to be honored by the Cuban government. He's going to get some medal, I guess, for being a good revolutionary. And I wonder if he's going to be standing next to the other lady who's been hiding in Cuba for quite some time, Joanne Chesimard, who, of course, was accused and convicted of killing a New Jersey state trooper. So there you have a couple of friends of Obama. Maybe they're going to do the wave with Raul Castro at a baseball game in Cuba. What a disgrace. But this is what happens. This is what happens when you rush into relations with a country who has a government enemy of the United States, and you don't demand anything from that government, such as releasing somebody like Joanne Chesimard, or at least giving a few more freedoms to the Cuban people. But what a disgrace to have this man, Oscar Lopez Rivera, standing in Cuba, being honored by the Cuban government maybe not too far from the U.S. Embassy. What an absolute disgrace this is. Another quick note, Rasmussen has President Trump at 46. You know, these polls are hard to follow, but 46 is a pretty good number. If that's correct, then that basically means that Donald Trump is holding on to the number of people who voted for him in 2016. And so that's, you know, that's a good sign for President Trump, considering all the negative that he gets from the media. Let's talk about Judge Moore down in Alabama. As I've written a couple of times, I would not have voted for Roy Moore. I would have voted for Senator Strange. Roy Moore defeated Senator Strange in the primary, and now he's the nominee of the Republican Party for the U.S. Senate. So he was not my first choice, but this is not about whether he is my favorite candidate or not. This is about running a story. The Washington Post came out. I'm sure you're all familiar with it. The Washington Post came out and ran a story based on something that happened in 1979 when Judge Moore was in his 30s, I think 32, and he allegedly touched a 14-year-old girl inappropriately. And based on that story that happened 38 years ago, they ran this story, and now, of course, they've created this big scandal for Roy Moore. I think this is way over the top. Look, I have no idea what happened in 1979 between these two people. As far as I could tell, there's no evidence. I mean, well, there is no evidence. I mean, there is no physical evidence. There's no recording. There's no picture. There's no video. All we have is she said, he said. And it happened 38 years ago. I think there has to be an understanding in the country. And I say this to the media. I think there has to be an understanding in the country that there has to be a point where you say, okay, no, we're not going to publish this. This is completely irrelevant. Now, if let's say the judge, let's say, had raped the young woman or had gotten her pregnant and then, let's say, forced her to have an abortion, that kind of thing, if they had done something like that, then that's a different story because at the very least you would have some physical evidence. In this case, it's basically he said, she said, and it happened 38 years ago. I just think there has to be an understanding in the media, at least the responsible media, that if somebody comes to you with a story that is 38 years old, you should say, you know what, we're not going to run with that. We don't like Judge Moore, but we don't think that's the proper role of the media. If you want to write a book or you want to do a movie, that's fine. That's a different story. But we're not going to inject ourselves into a campaign for the U.S. Senate by putting a story like that. It's just, I think it's way over the top. I think this is way over the top. And I think it fairly comes into what I would describe the category of a hit job in a campaign. I'm sorry, but I don't see how this can be accepted as good journalism. Now, as I understand, they contacted other people and other people said they collaborated the story that apparently the 14-year-old girl did tell her friends. I understand the article has stuff like that in it. But, you know, one of my favorite blogs is Powerline, and that's a great conservative blog run by three very distinguished attorneys in Minnesota. And they just wrote an article about this where they say that the Washington Post article doesn't prove anything other than, you know, Judge Moore and this young woman may have known each other or may have been sitting next to each other, but it doesn't prove anything about touching the young woman or whatever. Again, I'm not defending a man touching a woman inappropriately. I don't care what her age is. But I do think that there has to be a limit to how far we're willing to go, how far back we're willing to go with stories like this. Basically, he said, she said kind of stories. There's nothing here that anybody will be able to prove. You're going to believe whoever you want to believe. You're going to believe the young woman. You're going to believe the judge. But at the end of the day, it's he said, she said. And I just don't think those kinds of stories belong in our political arena. I'm sorry, I just don't. I think we're going to have to do something about this so that the media becomes a little bit more responsible, so that they understand that Americans really, at least I don't want to see stories like that. I just don't. I just think it's a waste of time. Have a great day, everybody. This is Silvio Canto in Dallas. Thank you for listening. We'll talk to you later.